It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have a light rain, still foggy and misty, especially here and there, 38 degrees in Kodiak. Calm winds at the airport, but they remain at 4 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies later today, a few isolated showers until then, high near 39 today with southeast winds to 10, gusting to 20. Scattered showers tonight with mostly cloudy skies, southeast winds to 20, gusting to 30. And look for gusty winds from the south to 35 miles per hour on Thursday. And indeed, looking at the sail drone forecast, there's an enormous low pressure that's taking up most of the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska, centered around Unalaska right now. Coming up on the Midday Report, state economists are predicting modest job growth in 2024 in Alaska. And drilling, will it make fishermen safer?
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. More tensions in the Middle East today. A pair of explosions in Iran killed more than 100 people at an event honoring an Iranian general killed by a U.S. drone in 2020. There have been no claims of responsibility. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, meantime, are mourning the death of a senior Hamas official killed yesterday in a still unclaimed drone attack in Beirut that's feeding fears of a broadening war. NPR's Nina Kravinsky has more from Ramallah.
Protesters chanted Salah al-Aruri's name in the center of Ramallah today. Some protesters carried Hamas flags. Al-Aruri is one of the founders of Hamas's military wing. He'd spent recent years in Lebanon working on a closer relationship between Hamas and Hezbollah. Lebanese officials blame Israel for al-Aruri's assassination. Israel has not acknowledged responsibility. Chants called for revenge for the killing of al-Aruri and solidarity with Iran-backed militant groups in other countries, Hezbollah in Lebanon and Houthis in Yemen. Al-Aruri's death has sparked fears of a wider regional war. Israel and Hezbollah already engage in daily cross-border fighting. Businesses across the West Bank also shut down today as part of a general strike in response to al-Aruri's killing. Nina Kravinsky, NPR News, Ramallah.
Congress is starting the new year once again facing a government shutdown that could potentially go into effect later this month. In a briefing today, White House spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre said Americans want Congress to work together with President Biden on the issues that matter.
But instead of entering this year with a new approach to deliver for the American people, House Republicans are prioritizing baseless impeachment stunts.
The House has launched an impeachment inquiry into Biden based on the business dealings of his son, and House Republicans are planning impeachment proceedings against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports they are keeping a focus on the Biden administration's policies at the border.
House Speaker Mike Johnson led a delegation of dozens of House Republicans to visit a border community in Eagle Pass, Texas. Separately, House Homeland Security Chairman Mark Green announced his committee will take up articles of impeachment against Secretary Mayorkas next week. Green argues Mayorkas's, quote, failure to fulfill his oath of office demands accountability. In the Senate, talks continue in the quest for a bipartisan compromise that will address the surge of migrants at the border. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, The Capitol.
An imam in Newark, New Jersey, was shot this morning outside of his mosque. Police are still investigating a motive. Governor Phil Murphy says prayers are with Imam Hassan Sharif and promised law enforcement would protect New Jersey's Muslims and people of all faith. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. State economists are predicting modest job growth in the 2024 season across Alaska in a new report released on Tuesday by the State Labor Department. Officials anticipate Alaska employers will add some 5,400 jobs, a 1.7% increase. After substantial job losses in 2020, employment has grown steadily since 2021 at more than 2% per year. Labor Department economist Karina Wiebold says the slightly weaker forecast for the year to come reflects larger trends.
Really, the story here is that we're out of the COVID recovery big picture, and we're moving into this new phase where we're going to be absorbing this infrastructure money that's been coming from the federal government as part of the Infrastructure Act and also the Inflation Reduction Act. And so those dollars we expect to start hitting the pavement this year, and that's going to be one of our primary drivers for growth this coming year.
Construction is expected to add more than 1,000 jobs, an increase of 6.7%. Employment in the mining and oil industry, another bright spot in the forecast, predicted to grow 8.7%, or about 1,000 jobs. Economists point to a new gold mine near Tok, set to begin production this year, and preliminary work expected on the Willow and Pikka oil fields. But Wiebold says, as with any forecast, there's a lot up in the air. An unexpected national or international recession could put a damper on tourism numbers. Delays in infrastructure projects could push back construction hiring. But the biggest headwind, Wiebold says, is the persistent labor shortage. There are twice as many job openings as unemployed people in Alaska.
If we don't have the people to fill those jobs, then those jobs, in essence, haven't been created. So that's really kind of the wild card is, are there going to be the people to fill the jobs in the places and at the times that we need them?
She points to two factors making the labor shortage especially acute in Alaska. For one, a large portion of the state's population is aging into retirement. For another, more working-age people are leaving the state than moving in, especially young families in their 20s and 30s. Between 2013 and 2022, the state's population was essentially flat, losing just about 1,000 people. But over that same period, the state lost 30,000 working-age adults and 18,000 jobs along with them, according to Wiebold. About 40% of those losses came from the oil and gas industry, according to state economic data. And Wiebold says even industries like fish processing and tourism that tend to import their workers from out of state could find themselves struggling to hire.
If we can't draw some of those out-of-state workers up here this year because they have opportunities at, closer to home or perhaps that pay more, then we could be struggling to fill jobs in industries that regularly rely on that out-of-state workforce.
She says that's one reason that jobs in leisure and hospitality are forecast to grow a modest 1.4%, despite cruise ship visitor numbers forecast to reach or exceed last year's records. Jobs in manufacturing, finance, and information are expected to underperform other industries with zero growth, but none are forecast to shed workers. The data has some significant gaps, especially in the fishing industry. People who are self-employed, including commercial fishermen, as well as farm workers, domestic workers, unpaid family workers, uniformed military members, and others are not included in the data. The top elections official in Maine on Thursday disqualified Donald Trump from that state's primary ballot due to his role in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. In Anchorage, a lawsuit in federal district court seeks to have Trump disqualified from Alaska's 2024 presidential election ballot, too, but so far it has not advanced. Texas tax advisor John Anthony Castro filed legal challenges in more than two dozen states, including Alaska. Castro claims that Trump is disqualified by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which bars people who have engaged in insurrection against the United States from holding office. Castro, who is himself a long-shot Republican candidate for president, spoke about his claims to a reporter outside a New Hampshire courthouse in October.
The question is whether Donald J. Trump provided aid and comfort to an insurrection, which we all know that he did.
Most of the cases Castro filed have either been dismissed or he voluntarily dropped them. He filed the Alaska case in late September. Online records suggest Castro hasn't legally served copies of the lawsuit to the defendants. That's Trump and Alaska Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom, who oversees Alaska's Division of Elections. Without the required legal service, defendants don't have to file a response. Trump has always maintained he did nothing wrong on January 6, 2021, when a throng of his supporters left his rally at the White House and stormed the U.S. Capitol. Trump faces more dynamic 14th Amendment lawsuits in several other states. In Colorado, a group called Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington won a state Supreme Court ruling disqualifying Trump. The state Republican Party has appealed the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. Alaska's commercial fisheries play a crucial role in the national seafood industry. However, it faces a high occupational fatality rate, approximately 20 times higher than the national average. In an attempt to address this, the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, or AMSEA, is dedicated to training to reduce injuries and fatalities in marine and freshwater environments. AMSEA offers the Fishing Vessel Drill Conductor Course, which trains individuals to respond to emergencies at sea and instructs them on how to share that knowledge with other crew members effectively. Jen Smola will be teaching the course at the Kenai Peninsula College Kachemak Bay campus in Homer next week.
In any sort of emergency, if you have an idea of what you should do, it kind of gives you more of a focus instead of just going into panic and not understanding the proper steps to leading to your survival.
She says the class provides an opportunity to learn about flotation technology advancements and to develop skills and muscle memory essential in an emergency. These will be hands-on activities in the classroom along with a lecture.
We'll go over to the pool and actually don immersion suits and different types of flotation devices that exist and get in the pool and see how it actually feels to float around in these things.
The exercises are designed to be easily shared with others later through drills aboard the vessel. To ensure the safety of all crew members on board commercial fishing vessels, the U.S. Coast Guard mandates that monthly safety drills be conducted. These drills must be led by someone who has completed the Fishing Vessel Drill Conductor class.
This class is targeted for commercial fishing crew members. However, anyone that ever goes on the water, this is a beneficial class.
AMSEA will be conducting a Fishing Vessel Drill Conductor course in Kodiak on Monday and Tuesday, January the 8th and 9th, at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center on Near Island. There's no cost at all for commercial fishermen. To register for the class, visit amsea.org, that's AMSEA.org, or call them on the phone at 907-747-3287. A coordinated sting operation between the Alaska State Troopers and the U.S. Postal Service resulted in the arrests of two people in Nome last week. As KNOM's Ava White reports, the arrests stopped a large drug shipment headed for the Nome region.
Nome residents 43-year-old Toby Ernst and 35-year-old Yvonne Newhall were arrested after a coalition of federal, state, and local law enforcement worked with Nome postal officials to send an undercover officer to deliver the illegal drugs for what's called a controlled delivery of a package. Trooper spokesperson Austin McDaniel explains.
A controlled delivery, which essentially uses law enforcement to attempt delivery of a package and determine who's actually going to be the one receiving it.
The package contained the equivalent of nearly 900 doses of methamphetamine and has a street value of more than $100,000 in Nome, according to a trooper dispatch. Ernst was arrested and charged with misconduct involving controlled substances in the third degree. Newhall was arrested on a warrant from the Nome court for failure to appear on a separate charge of assault fourth degree. Both are being held at the Anvil Mountain Correctional Center in Nome. For KNOM, I'm Ava White.
A drag queen story hour planned for the Soldotna Public Library this weekend has been postponed following online uproar about the event. KDLL's Riley Board has more.
The Storytime event was part of Soldotna Pride's winter celebration, called Happy New Queer, scheduled for this coming Saturday. Other events include a drag trivia night at The Goods in Soldotna and karaoke at the Bow Bar in Kenai. The organization announced the postponement in a Facebook post Tuesday afternoon, citing online rhetoric and a need to protect participant safety.
The reason that we're hosting this event was to create a joyous, wholesome, loving situation and safe place for queer kids, which is something that I didn't have growing up and that a lot of kids in this community don't have.
Joe Spady is an organizer of Soldotna Pride and was one of the scheduled storytellers for the event. He says conversations on social media got more violent and led organizers to postpone. Much of the online discussion focused on one particular drag performer whose name included a sexual innuendo, listed at the bottom of the promotional poster with other drag queens. Spady says that performer was never going to be a part of the story hour and was set to participate in the adult-oriented event, also advertised on the poster. That performer has since pulled out of the event entirely because of online threats. Spady blamed poor poster design for the confusion, but said he's found online discussions to be hypocritical and reminiscent of the backlash to a Pride in the Park drag performance in 2022 that involved a viral video of a dancer.
The people who were most offended spread it the most, made sure that everyone saw those images that they found so offensive. They spread it as wide as possible in the same way that people who found her last name offensive have been spreading it more than anyone.
Upon complaints, Spady said the poster was edited. In a statement shared last Friday, Soldotna City Manager Jeanette Bauer clarified that the city and library were not hosting or sponsoring the Story Hour event, and that Soldotna Pride had simply rented a community room. Although the organization's flyer clarified this, Bauer says a cropped version had been circulated online. She clarified that the library frequently rents its rooms to community organizations and said, quote, "This practice allows our library to serve as a welcoming and inclusive space for a wide range of community activities. The city is committed to promoting diversity, inclusivity, and the free exchange of ideas within our community. We respect the rights of individuals and organizations to express themselves in a peaceful and lawful manner," end quote. Spady says a new date hasn't been set, but Soldotna Pride is planning to find a safe and inoffensive way to host the event. The trivia and karaoke events are still scheduled for Saturday, January 6th, at 5 and 8 p.m., respectively. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
More than 100 people spent the first day of 2024 splashing in the frigid waters of Auk Bay as part of Juneau's 33rd annual polar bear dip. KTOO's Clarice Larson stopped by to chat with those who braved the cold.
Five-year-old Axel Bowling didn't have much to say after plunging in Juneau's icy cold ocean water on Monday afternoon.
It was really cold. It was cold.
But for his mom, Amanda Triplett, running into the water with her son, alongside dozens of other people, signified the start of a new chapter.
It is cold, that initial shock, but you come out afterwards, everyone's kind of smiling and bundled up, and yeah, it's really fun to come out and be here with the Juneau community.
More than 100 people spent the first afternoon of the new year partaking in the polar bear dip, a three-decade-long New Year's tradition in Juneau. The countdown began under cloudy skies with the temperatures in the mid-30s. At 1 p.m. sharp, the crowd of brave souls crashed into the waters of Auk Bay. For most, it was a mad scramble in and then back to one of the handful of fires scattered across the rocky beach. That was the case for high school sophomore Miranda Stickert and her friends, who are the only three people who showed up out of their entire cross-country team. They said they didn't mind because so many other people showed up.
It's so hype that everyone's here.
A few people managed to wade in the waters for a bit longer. Half a dozen Capital City Fire rescue swimmers were there alongside them in case of emergency. Pete Boyd says the rescue suits aren't the warmest to wear in the chilly waters, but he says it's important to be there in case anything goes wrong and to support the community.
It's just really nice to get out with and show that CCFR is part of the community, that we're here to help out everybody.
Boyd says there were no reported injuries or emergencies at the dip on Monday. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Investigation continues on the case of a domestic violence suspect who died while being arrested by Fairbanks police last week. FPD Chief Ron Dupree says officers responded to a Turner Street apartment late on December 28th after receiving a call from a man who said his son, 30-year-old Timothy McArdle Jr., had threatened him with a knife and was damaging his home. Chief Dupree says officers tried to contact McArdle.
He came to the door a couple of times, but refused to come out, refused to talk to the officers. He could just be heard inside breaking things, further destroying the apartment inside.
An FPD release says that included throwing items out of windows and breaking water pipes. Dupree says police are required to arrest the suspect in a domestic violence case, and officers entered the apartment to do so. He says they attempted to use less than lethal force on McArdle, but citing the ongoing investigation, declined to be specific.
We have pepper spray, tasers, batons, beanbag rounds, pepper ball gun. We have a lot of different options that we can utilize in circumstances such as this.
But Dupree says the officers ultimately physically engaged McArdle, who fought them.
A hands-on circumstance, and got him handcuffed. Once they got him handcuffed, they found that he was unresponsive. They checked for a pulse and began CPR and called for EMS.
Dupree says five officers were involved in the handcuffing, which took about 2 minutes. He says McArdle's father suspected his son was under the influence of drugs.
Told officers that he believed he'd been smoking methamphetamine.
Dupree says police are awaiting the results of an autopsy by the state medical examiner.
That's going to be the key to this whole incident is, what he actually died from.
Dupree says preliminary autopsy results are expected by the end of the week. He says FPD and the State Office of Special Prosecution Investigators are meanwhile interviewing everyone that was involved and going over body camera video from the officers.
We will put together press release and release part of the video.
The chief would not put a date on when that information will be made public and urged patience.
We're still short staffed, so we have minimum number of officers working, minimum number of detectives. So we're doing the best we can, and we'll get results out as quick as we can.
Chief Dupree says all of the officers involved, some of whom suffered minor injuries, have been cleared to return to duty after taking 72 hours off, as required following a fatal incident.
U.S. employers are still trying to fill a lot of open positions. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute. The number of job openings changed little in November compared to the previous month, still totaling about 8.8 million. Slightly fewer people were hired, and slightly fewer left their jobs. Bottom line, the labor market remains strong. Richmond Federal Reserve President Thomas Barkin says there's no timetable for interest rate cuts, even as many on Wall Street expect them to begin as early as March. In public remarks, Barkin even says additional rate hikes are still possible. Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd are again diverting container ships away from the Red Sea after a weekend attack by Yemen's Houthi rebels. The group said it targeted another ship today. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the third day of January, the year 2024. Sun rose today at 9:52. It will set again promptly at 4:35 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 43 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 50 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 48 degrees, set in 1950, and our record low was -6, set in 1917. Currently 38 degrees. A light rain is falling. It's a bit foggy and misty, not as bad as it was before, although at the airport they are still reporting only 4 miles of visibility and calm winds. The Weather Service is continuing to call for isolated showers and partly sunny skies. High near 39 today with east winds around 10, gusting to 20. Scattered showers tonight with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 33. Southeast winds to 20, gusting to 30. And showers are likely tomorrow, mostly before noon. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 37. South winds to 25, gusting to 35. And there is a gigantic low pressure out there taking up most of the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska, centered around Unalaska. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 12:50 p.m., just a few minutes from now. That will be a 3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:29 this evening of 5.8 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:27 p.m. and be 4.8 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:06 p.m. of 9.9 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side, out to 15 nautical miles. Southeast 25 today, becoming south 25. 16-foot seas, building to 17 feet tonight. Thursday, look for south winds to 25 knots and 16-foot seas. And for Thursday night, south 25, seas to 14 feet. They are calling for southeast winds to 35 knots, turning to the southwest 35 on Saturday and Sunday. Offshore waters, Marmot Island to Sitkanat from 15 to 85 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through Thursday, with south winds to 25, 16-foot seas, building to 25 feet this afternoon. For tonight, south winds to 25 knots and seas to 25 feet offshore in the Gulf of Alaska. And for Thursday, south winds to 25 knots and seas to 23 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Thursday with east winds to 30 knots, diminishing to 20 knots this afternoon, 7-foot seas. For tonight, southeast 25 and seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, southeast winds to 25 knots and seas to 6 feet. And even though they are calling for south winds to 15 knots on Friday, for Saturday, east 30, Sunday, south 30, seas to 8 feet over the weekend in the Shelikof. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include tomorrow's meeting of the Assembly. They're having their regular meeting in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers. On Monday, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. Oh, the Assembly's regular meeting is at 6:30 p.m. On Tuesday, they are having all kinds of meetings. The Solid Waste Contract Committee is having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 1 p.m. The Joint Building Code Review Committee will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. And also on Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. On Wednesday of next week, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session. That's happening in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And 1 week from tomorrow, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers next Thursday, January 11th at 6:30 p.m. Well, as we just heard in the news story, AMC is conducting a fishing vessel drill conductor course here in Kodiak on Monday and Tuesday. Certainly well worth taking, and you need to have a drill conductor on your fishing vessel. That's happening January 8th and 9th between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center at 118 Trident Way in Kodiak. The cost for the class is completely free for Kodiak commercial fishermen. It is $225 and well worth it for all others if you are a recreational boater or just care about boat safety. It's a great class to take. It meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. You can register online at www.amsea.org, that's AMSEA.org, or call them at 907-747-3287.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.